Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome in to the Season 2 Preview Show. I am Drake Jones, and I'm happy to be back on the air. We are awaiting a connection from Max Schumacher and Rodney Johnson, so we will wait on that. But great to be back on the air. And again, this is our Season 2 Preview Show. We're just doing an hour tonight, and then next week we're going to have several guests on. May even exceed 2 hours. It's going to be an extremely big show. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But now I'm joined by Rodney Johnson. We're still awaiting our connection from Max Schumacher. And how are you doing, Rodney?
Doing great. Good to hear from you. It's been a while. Looking forward to the show.
Absolutely. And again, as I mentioned, this is our Season 2 preview. We're going to do an hour kind of preview some of the stuff that we're going to be doing here next week and the following weeks, and some of our guests and some of the really exciting things that are on the horizon. So pretty exciting on that front. And again, this is our Season 2 preview. And so we'll go ahead and we'll hop into a couple stories here. And again, we are still awaiting a connection from Max Schumacher. So we will wait on that. We're going to be having some difficulties, technical difficulties there. But we'll go ahead and start with this first story. This has been all over not only paranormal news sites, just literally, I mean, the AP picked this up, the Drudge Report, CNN.com, pretty much everybody has picked this story up, and now we are joined by Max Schumacher. And how are you doing, Max? Again, we seem to be having some technical difficulties saying to Max. But so anyway, this story is quite incredible. And Max, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you great. Welcome in, Max.
How's it going?
Great. Great to have you on. And we'll go ahead and hop right into it. I'd love to get your thoughts, Max, and Rodney's thoughts as well. This first story, I think pretty much everybody's heard about, even if you're not a fan of the paranormal. I'll just go ahead and read the article as is, done by the Associated Press. It's titled, Refugees in Sweden Say Shelter is Haunted by Ghosts. And the article goes, more than half the shelter residents who are seeking asylum asked to move, but they are staying after Swedish authorities said that there was nowhere else to go. And the article goes on to say that basically 35 of the 50 refugees reported seeing that they reported seeing lights flicker on and off, hearing their name called, doors opening and closing, and were reportedly so freaked out, one demanded to go back and saying, quote, I would rather face prosecution in my former country than stay in this house. And so, I mean, that's pretty strong words there. And again, a lot of people want to know a little bit more about this building, and there's not too much known about the history of the building. We do know that it was built in, I believe, 1871, so pretty old building. We don't know really much about the history, you know, all the good paranormal questions. Did, you know, somebody die there? Did something happen? We don't really know anything about that. We do know, I believe, since like 1930, it's been the embassy there, something like that, I believe I read. But that's really about all we know. So we'll start with Max and then go to Rodney. What's your take on this interesting development in Sweden?
Yeah, I read about it on the Drudge Report, which I thought was funny because you never usually hear about paranormal things on like mainstream media. But I think you kind of nailed it with the questions you laid out. We don't really know a whole lot about it as far as the building and who's been there and who's died there and what's gone on. But the fact that that many people came forward and said that they reported the same things, and I don't know how small is that people there at once. I don't assume there'd be 50 people there at one time, or if that's over time. So that was my other question. I didn't catch that in the article, if that was, you know, 50 people there all staying there at once reporting the same thing, or if that was 50 people throughout an extended period of time that had experienced the same thing. That was my only real question with it. But I think it's certainly kind of crazy. I'd like to know more about the building, and obviously considering it's an embassy, it's probably, you know, I wouldn't say high security. I don't know, high security, but there's probably not a lot of video that people are going to get to see of the inside and what's going on and everything like that. So I guess we'll just have to keep hearing reports about it. But I didn't know if you knew my question, the answer to it, or if you'd found the answer.
You know, from what I understand, it was the group of all of them, not just over time. It was on, I believe, right around January 1, they all went to the authorities as pretty much as a mob, an angry mob, I guess you would say, and they all just kind of together. And then I believe the article says that, the authorities tried to calm them down and kind of basically make some sort of a makeshift line to try to get each person to kind of tell their story. And, I guess a completely wild scene. And, again, I think what's really interesting about this, from I've read several different things, but this is a first-time thing. This isn't, you know, oh, the old ghost stories. It's so random. They're, you know, it's just very random. Rodney, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think you really have to be there. I hope you guys can hear me all right.
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Okay. Well, I'd like to see some evidence. I know one of these people or some of these people probably have a cell phone which has recording, you know, devices on it, as well as video and picture capability and whatnot. So, I don't know that people should be so freaked out unless they get some sort of real evidence going that I'm not aware of. Unless we can get some solid evidence together, I don't know really what we could comment about as far as that's concerned.
Well, yeah, and again, this story, you can find this anywhere. I mean, this is not one of these, you know, on some obscure website. I mean, this is everywhere. And one question I do have for you, Rodney, and then we'll ask Max the same thing. Do you believe that this is some sort of, you know, intelligent activity that doesn't want these refugees there for whatever reason?
Not necessarily. The fact that you alluded to it earlier, that it's everywhere, sort of brings up a point. Things don't get to be everywhere unless somebody's pushing it. And so I really think that this is possibly some sort of sideshow or something like that. But I fear that it's everywhere. It really, maybe not necessarily, except without any evidence, be as big of a news story as it is, but it's more flame for the fire with that whole situation. And so I really think we should right now lean towards trying to maybe understand it in a different way. You know, like I said, it may just be a news story. So we should definitely be diligent about, you know, overhyping and things like that. But I think that's what you kind of alluded to earlier there. It's Drake. It's one of those kind of things that when you see everybody has it and it's out there and it's usually, you know, like the biggest stars or the biggest people, you hear about them a lot. That's because somebody's diligently trying to put the information out there. And so we need to keep that in mind.
Absolutely. And, it's been about 2-3 days since I've heard any sort of updates or anything like that on this story. So we'll definitely keep our ears open on this one, and next week I'm sure there'll be some other news. Max, do you have anything else you'd like to add on this story before we move on to something else?
Yeah, you know, I kind of, not to say disagree, but different take than what Rodney was saying. You know, I don't think it's necessarily there is, I agree what he was saying, there's, you know, obviously scenarios and stories that are so blatantly thrown in your face and put out there and pushed for whatever reason and whatever agenda behind it. But, I think what Drake was getting at by saying it's as popular as it is, you know, it's not one of those ones that everyone in the world has heard about, but if you're familiar with paranormal things, it's funny that, you know, we're talking about it all over different media stations for a little bit. So, you know, anyone who had any sort of interest in it definitely caught it, but everyone else, it kind of went in one ear and out the other. It's
right.
Definitely not some major news story that's unfolding. You know, it's not like they're talking about it developing as we go or whatever. But it is interesting, I think, because the amount of people that came out and said something about it. That was my only other thing. I think Drake had misunderstood my question. I didn't know if those all, 50 people were having the same experience while staying. You know, usually if they're, from what I gathered, they're seeking asylum. So, they were, from what I gathered, living there. I didn't know if they were staying there or living there at this place at once and all experiencing the same thing, or if that was all of them, over extended periods of time, groups of them had encountered that, or if it was, they were all there at once, or if this was, over several years, different groups had noticed the same things and then got together and complained. But anyways, there's probably a lot more stuff we can talk about, but that was just kind of my last take on it.
Absolutely. And also right now, too, I'd like to say the season 2 premiere, again, this is the preview show, so we're going to talk a little bit about what's going to happen next week. It's going to be our biggest show yet. It's going to be it's going to be at least 2 hours. It may exceed 2 hours. We have two guests right now that are lined up, and I'll go ahead and tell you a little bit about them. The first is Jack Duclub, and he's an expert on the I-4 dead zone. And we've talked a little bit about that. There's just been a lot of strange things that have happened there. It's the stretch of road from Tampa to Orlando. The accident count is double what it is anywhere else, pretty much in the entire Central Florida region. People report seeing ghostly hitchhikers. Really one of the most haunted stretches of road in the country. And he's an expert on there. And so he'll be calling in at the beginning of the program. And then towards the end of the program, we're going to have Tim Raham. He's a Bigfoot expert who has a lot of knowledge and even two different encounters with the swamp creature in the Florida Everglades. So that's going to be really exciting. Those two guests talking about two things that are, very popular, very questions, even a lot of controversy. I know there's been several things that have come out about the swamp creature, and some people think that the photos are fake, this and that. So I'm really looking forward to getting Tim's take and also Jack Duclub's take. It's going to be really fun. And like I said, and we might even have Joe Ortiz come on. I have not heard back from him. So we're going to have a lot of guests, and again, it will probably be 2 hours. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and again, that will be next Friday at 8 Eastern time, and it's just going to be a blast. These guys, Tim, I've talked to them on the phone several times. They're outstanding, extremely knowledgeable, so you're not going to want to miss. And moving on, let's go ahead and get to another news story. There's been a photo of an abandoned hospital inside the hospital that has been circulating on the internet, and I think probably most people have seen it right now. Go ahead and tell the story. It's in Liverpool, and it was a hospital used during the early part of the 20th century when there was I believe it was tuberculosis. There was an outbreak, and it was a hospital for tuberculosis, so obviously a lot of people died, a lot of, tragic stuff went on there, and then it went on to become a different kind of hospital, just kind of your normal hospital in the 50s and 60s, and I believe for the last, since 1995 maybe, it pretty much sat empty. There was some legal thing where they couldn't tear it down. I'm not quite sure exactly what happened, but anyway, it's a really interesting article. You should totally check it out. It's on ghoststories.org. It's really interesting. But the picture, it's a pretty interesting picture. There's a guy who somehow he got access in there. I'm not quite sure how. And it was right before the day, actually literally the day before they were going to tear it down. I'm not quite sure how he got access in there. If you zoom in on this photo, and I know Rodney and Max have seen it, it looks like a man with just a torso. The bottom half of him is pretty much cut off, and it looks like he's wearing a lab coat. It looks just like what a doctor would wear. So a lot of people think that it's the ghost of a doctor, and there's several people that have commented about knowledge of this hospital. There was one guy who made several comments on the article saying that he had some sort of friend. It was one of those friend of a friend who was a doctor there in the 60s and 70s, and he really enjoyed the place, and he thinks that the ghost of his friend's friend or whatever. But it's really been, like I said, circulating the internet. And just look up Liverpool abandoned hospital ghost photo. It will come up. But yeah, pretty interesting. So we'll start with Max and then go to Rodney. Number one, have you seen the photo? And number two, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I have seen the picture you're talking about. I know you'd send it to me. One of the things I thought with the picture is it's weird. You can definitely see the outline of what looks like a human torso or something, or the looks of it, you know, maybe not proportionally correct, but it's something you can see in it. But the rest of the picture is kind of blurry and unfocused. I'm guessing whoever took it probably was working on the site, and I assume they do a lot of checking things and double going over, making sure there's nothing left in there before they tear buildings down. I don't know. That'd just be my take on why it was there. I really have no idea, though. But I think one thing people always kind of want to think we know stuff, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You know, people can say it's a doctor, it's a whatever. You know, it's great. You could put two and two together pretty easily that if you saw something that looked like a ghost and you believe in that, that, you know, it was a ghost of a doctor or a ghost of someone who died. But in reality, even if this evidence is something that is real and it is, you know, a person, there's no real way you'd know who it was, what it is, if that's, you know, anything like that. I think people saying it's, you know, a doctor or it's this, it's kind of a little blown out of proportion, especially because it's just one picture. Now, if this was, you know, 20 different pictures or, you know, video or something, you could kind of study a little bit more, that'd be cool and great. But it's definitely a cool picture. If you could let people know where to look it up, it's definitely one of those cool ghost pictures to see, just as far as seeing a human outline. Normally people like to put pictures of orbs or, you know, clouds or certain things up, which some people find boring. Usually the non-paranormal person finds it really cool when you can see something that looks like a person or an animal or something that they're familiar with. So as far as it being anything tremendous or, you know, something that's, you know, groundbreaking, I don't think it is, but I think it's a really cool picture. I wish there was more. I don't know if there is more. And I guess the building's torn down now, so we probably killed the ghost or whoever did that. So that sucks, but this is kind of my take on it.
And love to hear your thoughts now, Rodney.
Well, yeah, I agree with Max there, everything you said pretty much. I wasn't horribly impressed with the picture, but I really think, for the most part, we can only spend so much time on those sort of things. It's looking forward to getting real-life interviews with people, because it's the eyewitnesses that we talk to and get to be on the show that really give us the most detailed information on things. Really, you know, as far as the pictures and stuff go, I think that's really good evidence, and it's one of those kind of things that it's almost like we need a separate person just to go through all the information, because it's a lot. And certainly we could speculate on, you know, photos all day long, but that's probably pretty much what it would be. Talking to live people definitely is the route to go, and looking forward to our next show. It sounds like it's going to be good. So, yeah, as far as this photo goes, yeah, I wasn't too impressed, but you know, somebody made an effort, so it has to be taken into account.
Yeah, and again, I appreciate Max bringing that up about how to look it up. You can find it on ghoststories.org, or it's a website where we get a lot of our information. I know the guy who read some of the articles we email back and forth is called hauntedphenomenalstories.com, and it's really interesting. You can the good thing about him is he doesn't put out too many articles. It's only like once a week. There's not like, you're not going to be like, oh my god, I'm, you know, 5 pages in and I'm not even 2 hours ago. It's one of those. He only puts something up when there's something good. So appreciate that story, especially because that's one where there's just such little known information. That's really the only picture we have. Max and I were talking before the show, and he brought up a really good point. And he was saying, you know, was there any other pictures? You know, what's his occupation? You know, can we find anything, maybe even try to contact this guy? And, you know, we don't even know his name. We know nothing. The only thing we know, we don't even know the hospital's name. We just know where it is. That's literally all we know. So, but again, very, very interesting story. And pretty interesting picture. I kind of agree with Rodney, though. I mean, it's not the greatest photo I've ever seen. But yeah. And moving on, this next thing we're really going to want to get Tim Raymond's thoughts on next week when he comes on. That's the Bigfoot expert who will be joining us. A new study came out by a website called LiveScience.com, and they do a lot of UFO stuff too. But they did some big. They were doing a big thing about Bigfoot creatures, and they came out with the top five Bigfoot sites in the United States, and it's pretty interesting. So I'll go ahead and read the list, and then love to get your guys' take on it. So number five is the Florida Everglades, which not a surprise. We're getting Tim on just to talk about that. Number four is the Valley National Park in Ohio. Number three is the State Park of Oregon. Number two is the Muir Woods in California. And number one is Mount Rainier in Washington.
Rainier,
I'm sorry. But yes, so those are the top five. And, you know, whenever you come out with a list like this, there's always stubs and people feel like, what should be number one? What shouldn't be number one? Going through the comments section, there was a lot of angry people. Some people felt like West Virginia was misrepresentative. Some people thought you could do the whole list on just places in West Virginia. So it was kind of controversial. And again, it's interesting because Live Science has never done really anything Bigfoot related. They've done some UFO stuff, but that's pretty seldomly. They're usually into technology, iPhones, the new gadgets coming out, things like that. So it's interesting, and I don't quite know why they've decided to do something about Bigfoot. I guess it's just gaining more popularity. I'm not quite sure, but very interesting. We'll start with Rodney and then go to Max. What's your take on this list?
It's gaining popularity because of our show, and that's what's going on. I think the list is, it sounds pretty good to me, to be honest with you. I lived not too far from Mount Rainier before growing up and in the mountains as a kid. And, all the stories and people were very much aware of that around there at the time. And so I'm surprised Mount Shasta and some of those other places aren't in there as well. But you did allude to something that's kind of interesting, the fervor and the rhetoric that goes back and forth between people who are really passionate about it. And so you're saying that there's a lot of comments saying, oh, you totally screwed the pooch on this one. You should have, put this one in there, taken that one out. I'm sure you're not going to ever have a complete list. I think you'd have to step back and take a look at it from a world point of view and look back, say, if you're from outer space and you could see all the Bigfoot-type creatures at one time, on the Earth's surface, you would probably, have something there. But as far as the list goes, I think it's pretty good. Interesting, Ohio, I never really realized was a kind of a spot that was considered to be a hot spot. So that's kind of interesting, certainly. But that's about all I got, really. I think it'd be interesting to see whether or not that actually putting these hot spots out there and to the public is going to then further draw attention to the subject and people, sightings and things like that. And it's what's kind of amazing to me is why we haven't seen quite a ramp up. We've seen quite a ramp up of, ETs and things like that with cell phone and video cameras, but we haven't seen that much of a giant.
Yeah, absolutely. And Max, what are your thoughts?
Excuse me, can you hear me?
Yeah, yep. I can hear you great.
Sorry, I cut out for a second. The top, from what I gathered, you originally said I had bad signal, the Bigfoot spots.
Yeah, pop pop.
Yeah, from the places I heard you say, I would gather a lot of it has to do with the landscape around it. if you live in an inner city or a giant area where there's buildings everywhere, there's probably not a lot of Bigfoot sightings. But, the places you said, like Oregon and, there's trails and hiking places everywhere. And, that's what people like to do sometimes is hike around. And, of course, the amount of people that are out there, that there's going to be a large report of people seeing stuff. But I don't think it's anything too major. People like to make lists all the time. I mean, people could make a TV show making fun of it or something. There's a top five this, top ten this, and then it changes. What's the top ten the next week? So, you know, it's, I think it's just another one of those things that came out. I think it's a good thing to look at, I guess, for areas that like to report Bigfoot activity. But I think we've kind of put that together already. Not to be a, you know, party pooper, but I think we've kind of concluded that the Bigfoots have been seen in, you know, wooded areas and wilderness, not necessarily, you know, walking around New York City. So that's just my take. But it's always cool to, you know, see different places that they come out with. You may not be familiar with some of them. And but, yeah, that's about it. I'd like to see a list, a longer list. I hate top five and top ten. Why not top 1,000? And then I actually, you know, have something I can read for a while.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that would be nice. But yeah, I really appreciate you guys' take. And again, this is livescience.com. It's a really cool website, and interesting they've decided to jump into the Bigfoot field. And, you know, one thing I would like to add on this before we move on is the fact that I like the fact that they stayed a little bit away from, you know, the top five Bigfoot creatures, because we've talked a lot about, you know, that Bigfoot conference that was held right around Thanksgiving weekend with the North versus the South Bigfoot. You know, is the Everglades ape, is he, you know, more terrifying than the Ohio Grassman? That's a very prominent one in Ohio. I believe that's probably why Valley National Park was highlighted. Because, again, there's just so many unanswered, you know, things with these creatures. You know, for example, what is the difference between a Yeti and the abominable snowman? And there's a lot of people, there's actually one guy who in the comment section was saying that it was really interesting. He went back and forth, and he was saying that, you know, basically, even though they, like, for example, the Ohio Grassman was seen in Ohio, and until, like, 1950, it was like, oh, my God, the Ohio Grassman. And since, like, 1950, people now just call him Bigfoot. And so basically we don't know if they're all related or what exactly the deal is. We do believe, though, at least in my opinion, that there is pretty much something going on out there. But, again, I like to stay away from the labels just because, you know, I could see something and name it one thing. You could see something and name it something else. So I really think it's good that we're staying away from labels. We're just saying this is a highly active spot where people see stuff. So I think that's good. And moving on, this next story was actually featured on GhostAdventuresCrew.com. And Ghost Adventures, that's the TV show with Zach Bagan. And it's a really interesting story. If anybody out there has an ovulus, you'll definitely want to hear this. So if you're not familiar with how the ovulus works, and how pretty much how the words come into the machine, there's only like 300 words that are actually in the database. And so that's why sometimes people, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, some of the ghost hunters we've had on, and, you know, they kind of get frustrated because, you know, you could be like, you know, what year did you die? And you get apple. And the thing is, what a lot of people believe is there's only so many, you know, words, and it's such limited to so many simple things. You know, half of them, you can look at them online. Just go to digitaldowsing.com. That's the people that make the ovulus. You can look at it online and look at the words, and pretty much half of them are just really just, I mean, just as simple as possible, you know, bird, tree, you know, just basic words. You know, there's not 1885 in there or something. It's just strictly basic, and again, it's great technology, but at this point, for whatever reason, they can only put like maximum 300 words in there. And so basically at the Whaley House, and I know a lot of people obviously are very familiar with the Whaley House, one of the most haunted places in America, actually has been featured in Time Magazine like two or three different times as whenever they come out with their Halloween issue of Time Magazine as the number one haunted place in America. It's actually been on not only in the article but on the cover of Time Magazine like three times. And also, too, an interesting note about the Whaley House, Regis, the TV personality, when he was just starting out in like the mid-70s, he worked for a TV station in San Diego, and there was some guy who evidently worked at the Whaley House, and he told Regis about it, and Regis kind of laughed it off and said, okay, whatever. And it kind of went into a little bit of a verbal altercation, and said, and the guy said, if you're so, you know, you don't believe in this stuff, then spend the night at the Whaley House on Halloween night. And Regis agreed, and the facts aren't fully known on what exactly happened, but apparently Regis was so scared that at 2 in the morning, he sprinted out of the Whaley House and said he'll never come back, or reportedly heard his name, or, you know, heard some pretty serious stuff. And again, that's Regis, you know, the TV personality, very famous. I'm sure everybody's familiar with him. But anyway, back to the story of the Whaley House. There was a ghost hunting group. The San Diego Paranormal Investigators, SPI, were there. And apparently they were using the ovulus, and they got Thomas. And then a second later, they got Whaley, and which is just incredible because the man who built the house was named Thomas Whaley. And Thomas is in the database, but Whaley is not in the database. And they've contacted numerous people that Bill Chappell, for one, who built that exact ovulus, and he has no idea how that could happen. So it's pretty remarkable that that word was not even in the database. So we'll start with Max and then go to Rodney. What do you think about this story?
Yeah, that is definitely really crazy. That would freak me out. You know, as far as the ovulus actually goes, I know we, you know, you and I and Rodney have all used the ovulus together, you know, many editions, I think at least two or three different types. And there's definitely a lot of words on it. But I agree with what you said, you know, sometimes you'll be sitting there and you're asking questions or whatever it is you do. So, I mean, my favorite thing to do is just turn the thing on and have several of them and, you know, see what words I happen to get and just kind of be quiet. But, the words that you get don't always make sense. I know, not too long ago I was, out by Rodney in Missouri and, at the farmhouse, I got demon, which was one of the weirder words I've gotten an ovulus to be, because I was, you know, over there by myself at the time, so that was not a fun one to get in the middle of the night with an ovulus in your hand. But I think they need to include, and I'm not sure if they do or if you can find it on their website, is what words are actually in the database. Because, you know, we get words all the time, and I feel like every once in a while we get new ones, but there's a lot of repeat ones that, you know, we run across a lot. It'd be good to have a full alphabetical list of what words are in there. And then, like you said, if you get a word and you've never heard it before and you look in the manual or whatever and you see that that's not supposed to be in there, that's definitely something really bizarre. But what I'd like to know, and I don't know, I've been explained it sort of before, but I don't understand it entirely, is how the ovulus actually works as far as, you know, yes, we know what it does and how it has functions, but how does it, you know, interpret, you know, what is it getting and where's the word coming from is, I guess, my biggest question with it, and what decides the different words. And it'd be good to have someone on that is really familiar with it and maybe someone who knows something about the design, because I really don't know a whole lot about it, but we could go on a whole show about that. But as far as the Whaley House goes, to actually get words that are related to people that have lived there, I know we're familiar out at the farmhouse with Rodney of some of the residents that used to live there, you know, hundreds of years ago, but we've always tried to get, you know, names of the people, whether it's first names or anything remotely close, and I think we've gotten one of the first names before as far as Fred being in the database. I'm not sure, I may be wrong, but it's really weird when you have something that comes up that, you know, you can put two and two together as far as who lived there before. But Whaley, I know that does not sound like it should be in there. That's really bizarre. Did they ever come out with an explanation as to why that would be, or if they've ever had someone report that before, not necessarily Whaley, but a different word that's not supposed to be in there?
From what I understand, yeah, I mean, they literally were able to contact Bill Chappell, who is the guy who created this, who's the president and owner of Digital Dowsing. And according to the article, he was baffled. He has no idea. And, you know, he has the list of every word, and he has no idea how any possible way that could get in there.
Yeah, that's really bizarre. You know, this is kind of my take on it. I'm sure Rodney's got one too. I just thought it was interesting. I was just using the obvious not too long ago with Rodney, and I got some words I never got, one in particular being demon. I don't know if people get that one a lot, but that's not a fun one to get in the middle of the night practically when it's dark out and you're by yourself. But I'm yet to get anything that really would freak me out on the level of it being something that is related to me, whether it be a word, you know, maybe it might be my name or it be anything like that. So I think that would scare me a little more than a word like demon or, you know, hell or something popping up on there. But that's just my take on it.
And what do you stand on this, Rodney?
Well, I think what we need to focus on, concentrate on, obviously, is the fact that could it be that spirit activity we know can manifest itself in a lot of different ways. So we know certain people can be actually physically, touched or something like that. Well, which has been sort of documented many times. But what the idea is here is that somehow on the other side are communicating and manipulating the device in such a way where it might say something that it's not supposed to. I think the original design of the device is simply to take the EMS readings and interpret those into different categories, and then those different categories might go into different words. I think that's not for sure how it actually works, but I really think that getting a hold of the list would be great for everybody. I really think that the list should be provided with the device, just to throw that out there. But yeah, because I agree with Max. Just to be able to find out exactly what words are in there and if there's any repetitiveness going on with the sequence and programming of the device, because from what it sounds like, the spirits are actually manipulating this device and making it speak or do something else that it normally doesn't have in there. Now, we know that, the words, as far as when it speaks, as well as its text, because it does do both, you would think that W and T, of course, are going to be in there. Now, TOM is going to be in there, and, you know, wailing may or not be in there, but it may just be spelled differently. Sometimes what I've noticed is that sometimes you just make a distinction between the words that have two different meanings, and we get that a lot, and that's kind of a little flaw with it, I think, is that without being able to distinguish one thing and the other, it might say a common word, but it might have a couple different meanings, but it doesn't specify, and there's really no way to do that or tell. So kind of interesting. So, yeah, is it really possible that spirits are manipulating the device itself and so that it actually changes a number or a letter that's not in the dictionary? Certainly the entire dictionary is in the obulus, so the fact that it maybe can't come up with certain words is sort of odd to me. You'd think they would just put, you know, the dictionary in there and let it go. But that would be, I think, the next step, obviously, is to get an obulus and make it a little an upgrade and go from there. But great subject, and that's about all my take.
Yeah, and again, yeah, I agree. I'm not quite sure why exactly the whole dictionary is not in there. But again, a really interesting story at one of the most haunted locations in America. And very exciting news, actually. I just got a confirmation email for next week. We have our third guest coming on, and this man is named Robert Harrington. He's a ufologist, and apparently he actually witnessed the Phoenix Lights in 1996. I know a lot of people are familiar with the Phoenix Lights, so that's actually really exciting news to actually get an eyewitness from the Phoenix Lights. Great news, and come on. And that's really, really cool. I'm very pumped about that. And so everybody that is not familiar with the Phoenix Lights, just Google Phoenix Lights and you can read all about it. That is wonderful. Moving on to the next story here. apparently at a Texas pizza parlor, a waiter claims that as he was locking up the restaurant, a glass flew off of a table and shattered against the wall. And unfortunately, that there was no video taken or any sort of eyewitnesses or anything besides this waiter. But apparently, he quit. And the only reason that this story is known is because he went to ghoststories.com and told the story. And this is on ghoststories.com. If you're not familiar with how it works, the guy usually he only puts Like he'll put an article out, and then like depending on how many views it gets, he takes it down within like 24 hours. And this one's been up for like 48 hours, and apparently it's gotten a lot of views and it's getting a lot of comments. We don't know really much about the pizza parlor. Again, it's very vague on the details, but pretty spooky story. We'll start with Rodney and then go to Max. What do you think about this?
I was going to say, you might repeat that again real quick. I kind of missed out on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So in Texas, and we don't know what city, but there was a guy who worked at a pizza parlor, and as he was closing
Yeah. Right. I thought we had covered this story before. I wasn't for sure if we had already done that or not. But, yeah, we had talked about it before. The lack of evidence in this story is kind of where I stand about that.
It's hard to say that. This is actually a different that one was actually somewhere in Florida, and that's the odd thing. I was going to bring that up. It sounds very similar to the other story that is in Florida. So I don't know if there's something going on here where maybe it's a prankster, but it has garnered a lot of attention, so I felt that we should bring it up.
Yeah, well, one of the things about, you know, like a moving thing, something, you know, of physical nature, we discussed before about how much energy it might take to do that and what kind of a spirit or a force or what's on the other side that might be able to do that, certainly is more than just residual energy and things like that. Now, being able to fly off a shelf with any velocity and then break on the ground, you know, has got to be something kind of odd simply because there's really no way to figure out why would something do that if they were on the other side breaking a glass. Is that some sort of sign or something, or what would that really, you know, and how did that really affect the people that were there? Did they actually go, oh, no big deal, and go on with their daily life? Or is this something now that they're documenting and you know, trying to get some resolution on? So we'll have to look forward to see if there's any new information coming out on that. It's just the story itself is going to need some sort of backing, so that's where I stand on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to say one more time, again, I know this sounds very similar to the other story, but this is a completely different story from a different website. It does sound very similar, so hopefully we'll get a little bit more information out on the story soon. They usually put up follow-ups on ghoststories.com. Max, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, that was me. I had too much to drink at the pizza parlor, and I threw the glass. But no, you know, I just, if someone reports something like that, then there's no video or anything. I just, you know, I read enough Reddit and stuff online that people report tons of, everyone's got a story that something's happened to them, I guess. And I've never worked in the restaurant industry. I know Rodney has back in the day, and I have friends that have, and, you know, even today when I was out eating, I watched someone in the back accidentally, maybe they accidentally didn't, but maybe they were mad, drop a bunch of glasses and break them. But, yeah, that happens a lot. And, you know, just because someone works at a place and heard a glass break or said that a glass is broken and no one, you know, owned up to it, I think that that's not the weirdest thing that's ever happened in the world. But that's just kind of my take on it, I guess. There's, you know, no lack of evidence, like, there is a lack of evidence, excuse me, like Rodney said, if there was, you know, some video of a glass flying off a table and exploding on a wall, it'd be a different story. But, you know, I just as easily could go hop on the internet right now and go to a website and, you know, post that I was walking home and, you know, a beer bottle flew past me and exploded, and it would get a bunch of views. So I guess this, you know, whatever it is, it's hard to take anything serious without pictures or, you know, video. And I hate to sound like that person, but, you know, Rodney pointed out earlier, there's cameras everywhere now. And the fact that people still use the closed circuit television security cameras when there's all these high definition, you know, technology available, everyone's got an iPhone now. And, you know, you can get a 20 megapixel camera you can record high def video on. You think that there'd be more videos of stuff for people backing up their claims, and especially for a lot of scenarios. So just kind of my take on it. I think it's an interesting story, I guess. I'll have to keep an eye out for flying glasses at Texas pizza parlors if I'm ever there. So.
Yeah, and again, but it's a really cool website, ghoststories.com. They put out a bunch of really awesome stuff. And Moving on, as we know, our good friend Lonnie Anderson, who was on our show about a month ago, is a resident there, and PJ Wellington, who is part of a ghost hunting group out of Arizona, actually went. His group was able to get a secure Halloween night at the Jerome Grand Hotel, and they did a full investigation. We talked a little bit about the investigation and kind of some of the stuff they caught, but they actually just now published and kind of put everything out that they actually caught, and it's like 2 or 3 pages long of stuff that they felt, and then there's like a slideshow of stuff that they caught. Some pictures were pretty interesting. There were probably 10 or 12, they were interesting. There were some good orbs, and again, orbs is kind of one of those controversial things that people are always on the fence about. Is it dust? Is it this? Is it that? Kind of one of those hot topics. There was one video that was kind of interesting. It was kind of inconclusive in my opinion, but some people didn't think it was inconclusive. It was kind of this black, shadowy thing that kind of moved, but the problem was it was still kind of out there on 4 or 5 o'clock, so you couldn't quite say, well, maybe it was somebody, walking. It was real grainy, too, so I kind of give inconclusive on that. And again, from my perspective, the one thing I can say that I thought was amazing was the EVP that they put on there. It clearly says get out. You can listen to it for yourself. I believe they're called the Southern Arizona Paranormal Society. They were actually just on a Blog Talk radio show talking about that, I believe last week. It was very interesting, kind of hearing their take on it. But, I don't know who's heard it and who's not, but in my opinion, I thought the EVP was definitely a Class A. I thought it was great. The reason I bring this up also is, excuse me, our friends at hauntedmysteries.com came out with creepiest ghost towns, and they ranked Jerome, Arizona as the number one creepiest ghost town in America. And that's pretty high praise, in my opinion. And they actually used the evidence caught at the Jerome Grand Hotel, not only by Ghost Adventures, but by the Southern Arizona Paranormal Society as proof. Tombstone was number 2, which shocked a lot of people, as, Tombstone Birdcage Theater, I mean, come on, one of the most haunted places in America. But they felt that Jerome was number 1, and again, that's hauntedmysteries.com. So we'll start with Max and then go to Rodney. Number 1, have you seen the evidence by the Southern Arizona Paranormal Society? And number 2, do you think that they're the creepiest ghost town in America?
No, I don't think I have seen the evidence, actually, or if I do, I don't quite remember it. But I wouldn't know. Personally, I don't want to be one of those people that's talked about if I know or if a place is haunted or not, if I haven't, even if I've been there. But, I've never been there before, and let alone lived there. So I think it'd be interesting to ask someone like Lonnie, assuming you're talking about Jerome, which I believe that's what you said. If you are, it'd be interesting to have someone like Lonnie who's lived there or someone that's familiar with the location to actually talk about it to, give their point of view. I personally wouldn't know. And then again, we always talk about what is the most haunted town or is this the most haunted place or, a list of the haunted places or whatever. As cool as they are, I wouldn't quite know. It definitely helps you learn about a lot of different places, though, that's for sure. And I guess nice that they put the lists out. But from what Lonnie said, that that show we had a few months ago back, or I guess that was around Halloween time, if I remember, it definitely seems to be a really haunted place. The Ghost Adventures or Hunters or whichever show it was that went there with them was really a cool episode. And from all the stories he had and everything I read about it, even before the show and afterwards, I think it's definitely a town to check out with a lot of history that probably does have some paranormal stuff. And like everything he said, there's a lot of different possibilities and a lot of stuff definitely going on there. And he's been there a while enough and seems to know quite a few people in the town and trade stories and everything. So I think he'd be the person to ask, but that's just my take on it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been to Tombstone before, but passed through Jerome a little bit, but that's about it. So can't really comment too much on that. But yeah, the list, I guess somebody has to be number one, and hence the controversy. But I guess, you know, just shaking it up and Tombstone not being the number one for Cage Theater, then that's fine. Having a list, I guess, is something to shoot for anyway. So what's kind of interesting, I'd like to maybe get a data poll together and find out if there's any correlation between UFO hotspot areas and then any correlation to UFO hotspot activity areas. Like if we could just overlay a couple of maps and put those two diagrams together, I wonder if there's any correlation at all between, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, lights. Like I said, we talked a little bit about the Robert coming on there with the Phoenix lights. And maybe that'll get Roger the Skywatcher back on to call in and see what he's been up to. But I think that would be interesting. Just wondering if the activity that supposedly is, you know, I wonder if it's universal at all as far as the power sources that are on the Earth that would allow certain things to happen or certain entities to use certain areas of magnetic, you know, deformation or whatever you might call it. I think that might be something to look into. But as far as rankings go, I don't have a really opinion on the rankings as far as what would be the most haunted. You would have to be somebody that has visited every single city in America and then did a detailed analysis of it and then came up with a study and then said, yes, this is our evidence, you know, and all that. So Telda can quantify all the different evidence systems. And it's going to be an ongoing thing, too. It's like the ghosts aren't just going to stop, you know, whatever you might want to call them. But certainly, I think we're well on our way to having people at least take an interest in it. And that's my take.
Absolutely. And yeah, you know, it's with these lists, it's kind of tough because, you know, it's not, you know, there's really no statistics that you can back it up on. You know, you can't say, well, you know, 100% of people see something. You know, it's just such an opinion-based place. And, you know, one thing, when you get all tangled up, and I do a poor job of this, but when you get all tangled up in these rankings and these lists, the thing I try to remember is one thing that Zach Bagans once said, the most haunted place in the world may have not been found yet. And what he means by that is, you know, there could be a place out there that's never been investigated that's the most haunted place out there. And so you never really know. Kind of like what Rodney said, you know, the search isn't going to stop. It's ongoing. And kind of like what Max said, too, I'd love to get Lonnie's take as well on this. And that was a great show. And also, too, I highly recommend, if you kind of want to get a flavor for Jerome, Arizona, watch that Ghost Adventure. You can watch it for free on YouTube. It's called Ghost Adventures Jerome, Arizona. And you can really get a flavor of the town and just kind of the energy and the atmosphere. And kind of, they interview not only Lonnie, but several other local residents and kind of get their take. And it's extremely, extremely interesting. And Lonnie's wife, he actually mentioned a little bit, is actually a psychic. And she had a great quote in that it was something along the lines of, if you live in Jerome, you're going to be a part of it. And Zach asked, well, what is it? And she responded, you know, very quickly, the paranormal. And I think that really sums it up. But, you know, not going to have too much time. We've got about 6 minutes to go here. So I'd like to get this last story. And this is really cool because this is a study that was just done. A survey that was just done. And it shows that over 80% of Americans believe that there is alien technology in Area 51. And that number I thought was extremely high. It really surprised me. I was not able to go back and find, like, if they, kind of like some of the other studies we've shared, like if it's gone up or gone down. But that's an extremely high number. And I know a lot of people out there are probably thinking, newsflash, there's alien technology in Area 51. But in my opinion, this definitely shows that, kind of talked about with other stuff, that the American people are really kind of opening their minds a little bit to the paranormal field. We'll start with Max and then go to Rodney. What do you think about this new survey?
Excuse me. You know, that's you said, what percent did you say it was?
Over 80,
yeah. You know, they come out with, it depends on who they survey and all that. And the problem too is Area 51 is one of those things. There's video games about it. There's movies about it. It's known as this location that is centered around aliens. And kind of like I said, and Rodney was touching on earlier too, I think people like to think, not that we know things, but that we think that we know things or that we know what's going on just because it makes us feel better, or, you know, makes us feel safe. Truth is, I don't think any of us know, sadly, what's going on at Area 51 or whatever has. It's obviously very, you know, secretive military location. I know they just, government just seized the land of that family that's owned that, you know, out where they used to test the nukes and everything. And I know they tried to have them take some money, and they've been going back and forth for years. So obviously whatever's going on out there, they want to keep it their own business, and that's fine with me. It's just one of those things that I guess people really like to relate it to aliens. I know that there's, you know, the different things related to it and, you know, kind of what went on there and the different theories of why there's this, but 80% of people coming out saying that they think that there's alien stuff there. You know, I'm on board with that 80% too. I think there's probably all sorts of stuff there that we don't know about. You know, there could be anything there from what, you know, people like to say that it is. So truth is, it's very secretive. I don't think that there's any real information known about it except for what's already out there. And that's just really it. I would agree, though, that there's probably something going on there that's pretty creepy or something that we're not used to or that they don't want us to know, and that's probably why it's there and we don't know about it.
Yeah, well said. Rodney, what would you like to add?
Yeah, well, interesting subject anyway. And as far as being pushed, I mean, obviously, yes. You know, Area 51 in my lifetime has been the only thing and the main thing that's been pushed this entire time. I mean, you would think that the main place where you'd have alien technology, if you did have it, would be somewhere where people would not even know it existed. So I'm not saying that there isn't any there, but let's just say that, you know, I mean, obviously that's been the most publicized. So we can mark that down. And, you know, and it's I think it's a fanciful for an idea for people to get a hold of, too, because guess what? It makes you feel better if you think that humanity has some sort of play in it or some sort of feel like they have some sort of say in what's going on as far as ET, because it's kind of a scary thing for people. Like, well, do we have any contact with them? And if so, then who's doing the contacting and what kind of, you know, deals are going on? And that's been in the kind of conscious mindset of humanity for a while of if it's true and they do exist, then what is our role? And do we have a role? Do we have a say in what's going on, say, there? Certainly the public doesn't, the voters don't, and the taxpayers don't. So what does that say? That's always kind of bothered me that, you know, I mean, I understand there's the need for secrecy and all that. Obviously, we don't want to, as pedestrians, we don't want to know everything. Certainly, that wouldn't be fun. So it's one of those kind of things that maybe there's a couple ideas out there just to make people think about, you know, like that certainly is being pushed. And, you know, like I said, it's a good feeling for people to think that we have some sort of say in what's going on there, but, you know, we really don't. So, you know, 80% seems like a lot to me. Like I said, you could have surveyed certain people and you've got a certain, you know, range of activities. But interesting question and a good subject. And, yeah, looking forward to next show. And, you know, that's about all I have to say on that. Area 51 is always going to be a subject that we cover. So we'll probably cover it in a little bit next week, I'm sure. So, yeah, stay tuned and it'll be a good show, I'm sure. So.
Absolutely. And we only have about 60 seconds to go here. And real quick, next week, Tim Raham, the expert on the Florida Everglades swamp creature who he has encountered, he will join us at the first 30 minutes. And then towards the end, we will have UFOologist, an expert on the Phoenix Lights. He was actually an eyewitness to the Phoenix Lights, Robert Harrington. They will both be on the air, and so we're extremely excited about that. Some really great guests, some eyewitnesses. Real quick, we only have 29 seconds. Max, do you have anything you'd like to add, and then we'll go to Rod.
Nope, don't take up any time. We'll talk next show, and good hearing from you guys, and everyone tune in next time. And, yeah, looking forward to it.
Excellent. Yeah, I'll just throw it in there. Yeah, it's great that the eyewitnesses and the people that have been there is who we want to interview. So that's always good to have them on so that the listeners and the public can get, you know, witness accounts to just our speculation on some photos. So good things, and let's go forward and keep looking up.